We've got our children chowing down like special ops. So writes Anastasia Marx de Salcedo in her book Combat Ready Kitchen. I talked with her about how military research has made its way into the commercial food industry to impact nearly everything you find in the grocery store. And, she says, this research project started with a simple sandwich.
Yes, all started with a sandwich, and I'm a mom, and I pack a lot of lunches. And one day I was sitting there putting together a sandwich for my kids, feeling kind of virtuous, and then I started to think about the ingredients of the sandwich, and I realized that they really weren't very healthy or fresh. And that got me started doing some research on the individual ingredients, and particularly on how a long shelf life was achieved for them. And what I found was that at the origin of two, the supermarket bread and packaged deli meat, there was this reference to this obscure U.S. Army base, the Natick Soldier System Center. And I asked myself, what's the Army doing in our food? And the answer to that question became my book.
And in the process, you found it was much more than just those two, right? Is there anything we can buy in the supermarkets that hasn't been affected in some way by military research?
That's a good question. In the book, I give a tour of the supermarket, and I go through the various sections, and I combine usually several influences in each section, from produce, where you have the modified atmosphere packaging that is used for salads and greens, to refrigerated guacamole, to the meat department, where there are many different influences, to the center of the supermarket, where nutritionists tell us not to shop, where things like canned goods and freeze-dried coffee, instant soups, baking mixes, bakery items that are soft and chewy at room temperature, and the list goes on. So there are at least 50% of the items in the supermarket, I would say, and possibly many more, because there's a lot of influences on our food that I was not able to research either because of time or because I don't know about it.
What do you think this means for our health? It seems like a complicated relationship. On the one hand, they've really pushed for the development of some of the most crucial aspects of food safety, but at the same time, as you say, the extent of these additives can't be that great.
I think one of the issues is this. The Army is developing these rations, which are intended to be eaten for a short period of time in extreme conditions and often to supply a lot of calories and nutrients. And that's fine when you're more, but when you take these same values that are emphasized in those foods and apply them to consumer foods, then you end consuming things that may not be healthy eaten over the long term.
Right. So after doing all of your research, what sort of guidelines do you use when you go grocery shopping? Has it changed your attitude toward what you buy or how you cook?
Yes, it has. As I take my kids shopping quite a bit, and it seems like now we have kind of this game where they go around and put the things that they want in the cart, and I pull them out, and I say Army food. Because one of the things I realized in writing the book is that many of these items have the composition is a lot of non-food ingredients that are there to achieve long shelf life and stability of flavor and texture. So those sorts of things I would prefer not to eat. And so I do not buy energy bars, although I allow my kids to get them as a treat. And I try to avoid now, as much as I can, supermarket bread and certainly packaged deli meats.
So if there was one thing that you could remove from the food we get as consumers, be it a process, an additive, or an actual product, what would it be?
Question. I'm going to think about it. You know, I think that really I would try to eliminate as much as possible the influence on meat. And I think that has driven the meat section in a direction which is possibly harmful to our health, which is that we are eating a lot of these restructured meat products, which are the cheaper bits and pieces that have been put together into patties and nuggets and cutlets. And I think that that may be something that is quite unhealthy.
Is there something in particular that you think is really important and really good that came out of the research?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is, and that is HACCP, which stands for Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Points. And what it is a system for monitoring food safety during its manufacture, and it has data collection at all sorts of points where there might be contamination by harmful pathogen or spoilage bacteria and fungi. And it has really contributed a lot to creating safer foods, and it's used worldwide, actually.
Cool. So the center of all of this research is the Natick Center in Massachusetts.
That's right.
But I find it really interesting that many of the companies making all of these processed foods are here in Illinois. We've got Kraft, Archer Daniel Midland, Nabisco, Oscar Mayer. Even the man who started what would become the Natick Center was based in Chicago, Colonel Roland Isker.
That's right. You know, you have pointed out something very interesting, in fact, I hadn't thought of that, which is that, yes, the original research laboratory was located in Chicago, and it was called the Subsistence Research Laboratory, and that was founded in 1936. After the war, it became the Quartermaster Food and Container Institute, and that continued in Chicago, I think, until about 1960. So all those big companies would have been collaborators. And they stayed there on in Chicago, and the Quartermaster Corps and Army decamped for Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. And you visited the Natick Center and such. How did the military react to your requests for information?
Well, they were very helpful in that they let me visit the site a couple of times. They set up interviews with staff, and they even helped me with other resources. But the fact that I was researching something that was an Army division meant that certain documents were unavailable. For example, the Oversight Committee for Army Food Research has its minutes were classified for 25 years, so I was only able to see those up until 1987. And then information about industry-military partnerships is classified for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Was industry any more forthcoming, or was the military really more interested in talking?
I got almost zero interviews with industry. I did ask for them. That's actually a good point. And one of the things that I found is that doing this sort of research kind of had a chilling effect on the secondary circle. That would be the military collaborators in universities and in industry. And many of those people declined to be interviewed.
You've mentioned there were things you had to admit for the sake of space. Was there one of those things that you found particularly interesting or that was really hard to part with?
Well, one of the things is an enormous amount of Army research on the chemistry of flavor and texture, and I'm sure that's had tremendous impacts on the food industry, but I could not do that research because it would have been very time-consuming.
Maybe another book.
Yeah, there were a lot of things, especially in the plastics realm, that I could see some hints of interesting things that might be very valuable for the consumer to know. I did not have time to do that research.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you will write another book on everything you didn't get to?
Well, there are a couple little pieces that I didn't end up, as I mentioned, being able to include in the book. I would love to be able to write them, and I have one specific thing that I think could be very interesting. So I hope I get that opportunity. I also said military influence on our food system has great impact, but the military's influence goes to many other sectors as well. So that could be a topic for further books.
Mm-hmm.
That would include things like medicine and automotive, construction materials, and many more.
Sounds fascinating. So we're seeing a resurging interest with consumers on food that's healthy and what's not. Do you see that entering at all where the military is taking their research?
Absolutely. And like the rest of us, military has become a lot more concerned with eating healthily, and it's made an effort to eliminate things like trans fat and lower the quantity of salt and sugar in its items. So that's a positive trend. On the negative side, they've also discovered that by far and away the most cost-effective way to feed soldiers is with packaged rations and not the garrison or the camp kitchens. So that means they're maybe moving more toward a system of sort of all-day grazing from packaged rations rather than cooking breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that's because it's very expensive for them to ship the kitchen equipment, to run it, supply it with fuel, and then they have the issue of cleanup and waste. So it is, again, it's a much more cost-effective system to have soldiers mostly eating packaged rations.
Are there any other directions that you see the military-consumer foods partnership heading?
Well, I would say that it's going small at this point. There's a lot of interest in nanotechnology, and one of the things that the military has been doing over the past decade has been doing things like encapsulation of nutrients to add them into some of the ration items, such as the energy bars, and that, you know, allows them to stay intact or fresher longer. So on the science side, I see things going small. And on the consumer item, there's one that I'm pretty sure will be a big hit, which is the shelf-stable pizza. And that would be a pizza that you could store at room temperature for a long period of time. Just take it off the shelf and open the package and eat it whenever you want it.
Oh, man. Wow. Well, at one point, you say that the combat feeding program is so big that it's unimaginable. And if we were to try to erase it, we might end up erasing modern existence itself. Wow. That's an interesting...
Well, that would be military influence on our civilian lives, because if you take what I'm trying to show in this book, which is how the military impacts the food arena, that is happening. To give you a way to measure it, the Combat Feeding Directorate is one program of, I think, 8 to 12 at this particular Army Center. There are 80 Department of Defense laboratories around the country, so you can multiply what I show about food by 1,000 to maybe get the impact overall on our civilian life.
Wow. And towards the end of the book, you talk about some things that we as consumers, and we as just the everyday person, can do if we find the extent of this a little concerning. You talked about some steps to kind of bring everyday people back into the food that's on our shelves.
Well, I think there's several ways we can do that. First is we can just be aware of what the military influence is, and that's what I'm, you know, trying to do with the book, and it's really just the beginning. The second is to try and understand what the impact of eating these kinds of foods is over the long term, and not only in terms of things like fat and salt and sugar, but, you know, some of these ingredients that have not ever been eaten before. And I'll give an example. I think I recently read in some science news that fillers, which is one of the types of ingredients that may be used in processed foods, may interfere with the mucus lining of the gut and interfere with absorption of nutrients. It could possibly be related to obesity. So that's one example. And the third way is that I think that we should be invited in, at least to be aware of the decision-making that the armed forces is making about the direction of food science, and that we probably want all stakeholders there, consumers and the food industry, the regulatory agencies, and public health officials.
That was Anastasia Marks de Salcedo talking about her new book, Combat Ready Kitchen. I'm Amanda Hunnigfort. Thanks for listening.